Welcome to Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai. Marcellus Wiley coming up. We'll tell you if LeBron and the Lakers should still be the favorites when the NBA season resumes. And we'll also go out to Clemson, where there's a racial controversy brewing. But right now, I'm joined by LeVar Arrington and former Pro Bowler, Heisman Trophy winner, my boy, former teammate, and Dallas Cowboy, Eddie George. So let's start off in Dallas, Texas, where the Cowboys and Dak Prescott are still in a standoff over the quarterback's new contract. There's been a lot of debate over who has the upper hand right here, but the NFL Network's In Rappaport thinks it's pretty clear that Dallas needs to get a deal done more than Dak does. Rappaport says the Cowboys see themselves as a contending team and that the window for them to win is right now. So they have to work it out with Dak. Eddie, former Cowboy, coming to you first.
Yep.
You think there's any chance Dak loses the leverage here?
Oh, absolutely not. Without question about it. I think Dak has all the leverage right now, Marcellus. You think about who they have as a backup, and Andy Dalton, they bring him in for 1 year. And we kind of know who Andy is. And one thing that we know about Jerry Jones, that he wants to win. He wants to win right now. This team is built for success. They're built to win a championship with Ezekiel Elliott getting his deal a couple years ago. They just wrapped up Amari Cooper. They're bringing in some pieces and parts to shore up the defense. So he wants to win right now. And we both know, and we all know on here, is that you have to have a solid quarterback at that play. And Dak, to me, is a top 10 quarterback in this league. He's definitely worth the money that he's asking for. It's just a matter of working out the nuances. So if nothing happens between now and the start of the season, whenever we start the season, there's no injuries. He has all the leverage in his corner, and I think that he gets the deal done some way, somehow.
Yeah, while I agree with your points, Eddie, I still have to disagree and say that there is a chance that he could lose leverage for the very fact of what you just stated. What could happen now from now until the start of the season? If they get back to meeting and having workouts, this is a new coach. And what do new coaches do when they come into the fold of a new team? They have to root out and get rid of and address old problems for the reason why he's coming in as the new head coach. And then you have to sniff out and figure out what the new problems are and try to avert any type of new problems becoming a big issue that could hurt the development of the team. So I look at it from the standpoint of, if in any way, with there being no emotional attachment between McCarthy and Dak Prescott that I know of, he's going to approach this looking at this team from the perspective of, I want to make sure that I have the culture and have the culture right and the attitudes right that exist here in Dallas. And I think that could play against him, Dak Prescott, that is.
There's no way Dak could lose leverage. Outside of injury, not a single chance, not a single opportunity will present itself where Dak can lose leverage. Think about who Dak Prescott is. This is a guy who was a fourth-round draft pick sitting there in his mindset thinking, I'm going to learn from the $100 million man in Tony Romo, and was thrust into the starting role that same rookie year and led them to 13 wins. This is the same Dak Prescott when they put the gun to his head in his contract year and say produce or else, he had a career year. This is the same Dak Prescott that's been so durable, he hasn't missed a start yet in his NFL career. Only Russell Wilson and Phillip Rivers could say that in the last 4 years since Dak has been a quarterback. So when we're talking about losing leverage, we can't lose sight of who Dak Prescott is. This is the guy, man, that when it matters most, Dak's going to present his best self, not only on the field, but doing it the Dallas Cowboys way. And we all know this, especially you, Eddie, putting that star on your helmet. It brings a different level of scrutiny and attention. And Dak has held that role and been responsible with that leadership role better than anyone else we've seen in that situation. So when you look at it from that perspective, LeVar, you got to understand that you're talking about the culture, and you're talking about this guy, and this guy is the culture. There's no way he can lose his leverage because he means so much to them.
He is the culture? Come on now. I'll let Eddie go, but I'll address you after Eddie goes.
Go ahead. Okay, I'll go. So you talk about the – Marcellus, you mentioned something very interesting in terms of being the quarterback in Dallas. That's like no other place. I mean, that's – you are given the reins, the keys to the bench, so to speak, because this is the richest franchise in NFL history. There's so much weight, so much scrutiny that comes on that position. And Dak Prescott, not only did he perform last year, but he got better from his rookie year on. And to hold that weight and to hold that scrutiny, to deal with all the stuff you have, he's dealt with it tremendously. And to say that you're trying to rebuild the culture and establish your own culture, this locker room has been together for quite some time. So it's not like you're taking on the rookie quarterback, you're rebuilding the team. He's getting a well-established cupboard of talent in the Dallas Cowboys. All Mike McCarthy has to do now is organize it, establish some leadership, and let Dak and those guys do his thing. So I think, you know, for Dallas to lose Dak Prescott, you're losing a leader, you're losing experience, you're losing a guy that has done it and is getting better. He's entering his prime as a quarterback. So he has all the leverage in the world. And again, I go back to Jerry Jones. Jerry doesn't care about the money. He's a billionaire. He's not trying to win on the bottom line like most of these franchises are doing. He is trying to win a championship and say, listen, before I make my exit out, I have another championship put up on the back of my wall. So that's what he wants right now. Dak Prescott gives him the best chance to do that. So all the leverage is in his court.
What was their record last year? Oh, okay. Anyways, all right. I do realize that y'all both have put the star on your head, so you have a different angle, a different perspective. But let me give y'all a dose of reality with no chaser. Dak Prescott is not Dallas culture. He's not the culture. Dallas Cowboys, the brand, is the culture. All right. Now, if you're going to pay him based off of the things that you guys are presenting as the evidence to what makes him the culture or what makes him worthy of having this leverage, I think I got to push back and say, when you look at saying that Dak Prescott is a top 10 quarterback, I would not disagree with that. But when you're asking for top three money as a quarterback, you're going to have to bring up the real issues of what that represents. Dak is trying to leverage for a number one paid, compensated quarterback, and he's not the number one guy deserving of getting number one paid money. So if we're talking about all the things that Dak represents, I won't disagree with that, what he brings to the table as a player. I don't disagree with that. But to say he's the culture of Dallas, I disagree. To say that he has all the leverage to demand the type of money that's going to be around and up where Russell Wilson is now currently or where Mahomes is going to be, I think that's a stretch. That's a stretch.
So who are you going to rely on?
LeVar.
I know we got to go to another topic. Okay.
No, Eddie, keep going. I want to hear this.
Yeah, sure.
So who are you going to rely on opening day? And you want to hand the keys off to Andy Dalton? That offense is not the same without Dak Prescott, period. It helps Ezekiel Elliott out. The fact that Dak can pull it and run around the edge, it takes a lot of pressure off Ezekiel. Now, you put a sitting duck, like no offense to Andy Dalton, but if you put a sitting duck back there where he can't run and be dynamic on the edge and throw the ball downfield and be somewhat of a magician, so to speak, it really just makes them more of a target in terms of stopping Ezekiel Elliott and more predictable. So Dak Prescott is now in that phase where he can run the football. He can throw it on the edge. He had a big year last year passing-wise. So, you know, you take him out of that offensive element, it messes up the chemistry. It messes up Ezekiel. I think it just really tanks on that offense, and I don't see that happening.
Eddie, you do know that defense is schemed to stop Ezekiel Elliott this past season. In an attempt to make Dak Prescott win with his arm, and they were in 18. They were a 500 team.
Well, LeVar, you have to understand, you do remember how it felt to be on the field, not just in front of the camera. And on the field, guess what? You know who gets paid? It's not just necessarily the best. Because Russell Wilson, I'm not sure, is the best quarterback. But the next man up, who has potential and proven production, will get the most. Jimmy G 2 years ago wasn't clearly the best quarterback, but got the most money in NFL history. Let's put that point to the side. Let's talk about how this world is upside down to Dak Prescott. A two-time Pro Bowler, Dak Prescott. And you know what's so crazy? Last year, his best year, He doesn't even make the Pro Bowl. It's really myopic to blame all of the Cowboys' woes last year on just Dak Prescott. My last point is about culture. Why Dak Prescott is the culture. Because a lot of people have it wrong about what culture is. They think it's about what you write on the wall, what slogans, what mantras. Hey, be kind to others. It's not this. Ben Horowitz talks about in his book, culture is what's rewarded. Culture is what you want to see in terms of going forward and how everyone buys in and treats each other. That's why they have to reward Dak Prescott, to enforce what the culture is. Reward the player that is representing the star the best and allowing it to shine the most. That's who Dak Prescott is, and that's why he's going to get paid. Now let's talk about a guy who just got himself a new deal in a new city with a new team, Tom Brady. Even though Brady's about to turn 43, Coach Bruce Arians says he's fully confident in the GOAT and gushed about his experience coaching Brady at the Pro Bowl back in 2005, saying, quote, he wanted to win. Even in the Pro Bowl, he commands excellence, even on the field. There's no relaxation on the field when he's out there. If you're supposed to be at a certain spot on the route, you better be there or he's going to talk to you about it. Eddie, you think Arians is expecting too much from Brady?
Well, LeVar, you said the last segment in terms of culture. Well, this is a team that's in desperate need of culture. And no other. I mean, I'm putting all my Tom Brady right now to establish that. Six-time Super Bowl champion, 20-time Pro Bowler. I mean, listen, the man has the belt. He has the rings. He has the wife. He has the swagger. And he has the command of the locker room. Now, granted, you know, he may have declined in some areas in terms of where he's at in his age, and he may not be able to throw the deep ball with accuracy like he once did in his younger years. But what he comes with is a command, work ethic. He can show that, hey, this is how I prepare for week in and week out for NFL games to win championships. This is what I expect out of you. And guys are going to listen. And for Bruce Arians, that makes his job easier because he doesn't have to control the locker room. He doesn't say, hey, guys, be in at this time and hold yourself accountable. He can say, hey, you know what, Tom? I have Tom Brady in there. These guys will listen. I can just slide him the game plan. Now I can just focus on managing the team versus running a daycare because Tom is going to establish the culture earlier on. Unless he gets in there first three games, he throws 10,000 interceptions and he's just taking up the place. But until then, right now, he is the alpha of all alphas, and he's coming in there with a lot of respect.
First of all, you came at me yesterday, Marcellus, for bringing up the wife and said that didn't agree, happen to be a part of the argument discussion. I guess you have to have a famous wife in order to be able to talk about somebody else's famous wife. So I digress there. I'll leave that one alone. I'm so weak. Okay.
Anyway, Eddie has a famous wife.
Listen, this is an aggressive move by Bruce Arians to win now. It's a win now mentality by Bruce Arians because we don't know how much time, health-wise or time-wise, Arians wants to put into coaching. That's first and foremost. But when you look at who they have behind Tom Brady, it's Blaine Gabbert and Ryan Griffin. I'll leave y'all alone on Ryan Griffin, but let's talk about Blaine Gabbert. The last time he played 10 games was in 2012. All right? So he's played. This is his fifth team. All right? This is his fifth team. If Tom Brady goes down, you'd have to assume that Tampa Bay season goes down right along with him.
Man, look, Bruce Arians is smart right now. He's betting big, and he's betting it all. Because what does he have to lose? Talk about Tampa Bay's history, Tampa Bay's culture. You can't get any worse than this. And when you see Tom Brady walk in the building, you start to have that risk-reward conversation with yourself if you're Bruce Arians. You're like, wait a minute. Did I just get the GOAT who walked in the building who's going to minimize my risk and maximize my reward in terms of what I had at quarterback last year with Jameis Winston? Oh, you think I'm not going to be excited about this? We got to remember, for a culture to catch fire, it only takes one match. It only takes that one feeling like this guy can inspire us all. It's like if we were playing basketball, we were on a team. And then we get news that Michael Jordan is coming to our team. I don't give a damn how hard you've been working. I don't care how good you think you are. You're about to step it up somehow, some way, because the GOAT's in the building. And that's what Tom Brady's going to do in this situation. He's going to inspire others to make sure they step up and show their best foot forward. So coming up, looks like the NBA has a plan to start the season, but will the Lakers still be the favorites when everyone's back on the floor? Chris Haynes and Rick Bucher join the show next. Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai. Marcellus Wiley here. And now we're joined by Fox Sports NBA analyst Rick Bucher and Yahoo Sports senior editor Chris Haynes. Let's move to the association, where ESPN Woj is reporting that the league will vote tomorrow to ratify a plan that will resume the season on July 31st. The plan will bring 22 teams to Orlando with an 8-game regular season and a play-in for the 8th seed, followed by playoffs until October 12th. Back when the season shut down in March, LeBron and the Lakers had the league's best record and looked poised for a title run. So, Chris, will they still be the favorites now that the season is about to resume?
We don't have
Chris right now. We'll go to you, Rick. Sorry.
Yeah. Marcellus, look, I know Vegas has them as the favorite, had them as the favorite then. I expect that they still will be. They were never the favorite. I know this is going to be music to your ears. They were never the favorite in my book, and I believe that the circumstances actually tilt things in the other direction for the team that I do see as the favorite, which is the Clippers. The biggest element here is that LeBron James, at 35 years old, is going to have to carry more weight than any other superstar that is vying for the title. And under the circumstances, I'm sure he will be in great shape. But I wonder, with that older roster that the Lakers have, can they get everybody up to speed in time? Certainly 7-8 games is not going to be enough. I look at basically what we saw coming out of the gate when the Clippers and the Lakers played, and the Clippers handled the Lakers. They still weren't playing anywhere close to their best. They were the last time we saw them. But if we're starting from zero, to me, the teams that have depth, experience, and a variety of stars that they can lean on have an advantage. And the Clippers certainly have that. They can sustain an injury, and maybe even an injury to one of their top players, because they have enough other top players. If the Lakers have either Anthony Davis or LeBron James compromised, they simply are not the same team. So for that reason, the Lakers have been favored, understandably, have had a great season. But I just think under these circumstances, it tilts the other way.
Look, I can't believe I'm about to say this, but I am. I think the Lakers are the favorites when the NBA season resumes. You have to think about how much positive muscle memory they have this year in terms of success, in terms of flow, in terms of chemistry. I'm not just talking about the wins and losses. I'm talking about playing optimal basketball. And the Lakers are playing the best version of their style of basketball. Mm-hmm. My team, the Clippers, they weren't. Even though the Clippers beat the Lakers 2 out of 3 times, they were doing that at 70-80% in terms of chemistry, in terms of philosophy, in terms of flow. So when you look at it coming back and try to return, the Lakers are going to be able to draw back on a memory bank not so distant of where they were actually playing their best version of basketball. And I think that serves them well. We have Chris.
Marcellus, I've had enough. I've had enough. You've been dismissing me on this segment for so long. You've been going to Rick, going back to yourself, just completely dismissing me. I've been here waiting this whole time. The waiting here to say.
Fix your prepaid.
Hey, y'all supposed to be disclosing, you know, in-house business like that, Marcellus. But look, man, let me say this, man. The Los Angeles Lakers, I'm going to say, are the favorites still. And the reason I say that is because of LeBron James. LeBron James understands that his window is shrinking. His window to still play at a top 3 level talent in this league. And look, he's not going to let anything be wasted. That's why he came out. It was probably a month ago and just tweeted saying, look, Nobody else out there should be saying that this season should be canceled. It should be dictated by the players because he understands that this year was supposed to be special. You don't think that he's been working out with a few guys here and there in a socially distant climate, that is, and making sure in a socially distant climate. I had to add that. He's taking all safety measures, precautions. You know, he's not going to go come back and be, you know, at 100%, but he's going to come back and make sure that his team is above everybody else. And I think that they're going to have an advantage over most teams. And I still will say that they're the favorite.
Are we going to be social distancing when we get back to playing basketball again, too, if that's how they've been preparing for this? The thing is, Chris, that what he said before he said, I want to come back and play for this championship, and I understand why he would say it, but before that, he was on a podcast where he listed all of the things that were working against him, which is the fact that he's 35 years old. And this isn't time off and rest. This is restarting the engines. The Lakers in general, and him in particular, are one of the older teams. And I think that that's what is working against them. I also just believe that they were so good in L.A. They were so good on their home floor. They were good on the road, too, but not particularly good against opponents, the top opponents on the road. And now we're going into a neutral site. I will say this, though. The Last Dance made a great case for Michael Jordan and all of the intangibles that he had to overcome at 34 years old in order to win that last championship. And it really put a stamp on the idea that Michael Jordan's mental toughness was something that we have not seen from anybody else. LeBron, Kobe, you name it. This is going to be the ideal opportunity for LeBron James to make a case that, hey, I'm every bit the mental giant that Michael Jordan was, because we're going to go into a very unusual situation, no home court, no fans, starting from zero when I'm 35 and a lot of my team is old. If he can pull this off, it's going to be the greatest counter statement that he could make to everything that we saw in The Last Dance. I'm just not convinced that less so LeBron, but more so the rest of the Lakers are up to it.
I'm glad you got receipts, Rick, and I'm with you. Don't get it twisted. They're the favorites when the season starts back, but are they going to win it all? Hell no. We already know they're not going to win it all, and I give you the reason. Because their pre-social distancing success is going to come back to haunt them when they can't get back into that groove as fast as they desire. Think about this. When you know how it feels to have that good feeling, you chase it for the rest of your life. And I think the Lakers for this season know what that good feeling is when they beat Milwaukee, when they beat the Clippers all in that same weekend. Oh, and then they get out there and they sputter. LeBron's looking around. We know how LeBron looks at players, his teammates, J.R. Smith. He's going to hit him with a few of those. Like, what are you doing? And what have you been doing since we've been quarantined? It's going to be a sputtering effect. Meanwhile, a team like the Clippers, a team like Boston, Milwaukee, that didn't hit their full stride just yet. And let's stay focused on the Clippers. You look at that situation where they're building. They know they have to put more wood on the fire to get to the place where they love and show everyone how optimal their game is. So when you look at a situation like that, you start to realize, hey, the Clippers, the outside teams, the teams that are number 2, 3, 4 behind the Lakers, those are the teams that have something to look forward to and something to build on. Well, when the plan is going to come to fruition and the season does resume, the NBA is considering reportedly that there are some unusual proposals on the table that's going to give higher seeds some kind of home court advantage during the playoffs, including giving them the ball to start the second, third, and fourth quarters, allowing them to designate one player who can get 7 fouls, giving them an extra coaches challenge, letting them use the hardwood from their home floor, and even giving them first pick of hotels at the Disney complex. Chris, you like this idea?
I like 90% of it. You know, look, picking a Disney hotel, what kind of home court advantage is that? How is that going to help you out on the basketball court? And look, I get the timeouts. Right. That would be clever. That would be unique. just to see one player get, you know, able to get seven fouls. But at the end of the day, look, it's not really home court advantage if the fans aren't there. Is this stuff really going to help? Is this that everybody is at an inconvenience? So I think everybody should just play at an inconvenience in Orlando and do what it do. And, you know, I'm very looking forward to Marcellus Wiley to see what you guys say about these topics as well, because the first topic that we was discussing, you were a bit loopy. It seemed like you've been swinging on that swing in the background of your picture there a little bit too much, swinging all around, if I could state that clearly. But go ahead, Rick. I think it's okay. 90% I agree with it. Hotel accommodation, get that out of here. That does not help on the court.
Chris, the only 10% that I agree with in giving home court advantage is you guys get to pick the hotel you stay in. I'm not giving you any in-game advantages. What the hell? We're going to give it. Why don't we just say that the other team has to play left-handed for a quarter? I mean, why would we possibly skew things in-game to accommodate for home court advantage? As we've all seen, home court advantage has really not been that much of an advantage for playoff teams. It simply hasn't been the same factor. And by the way, this kind of ties into our first subject, because I started looking into this. This wasn't the top seeds getting together and coming up with ideas. You know who proposed these ideas? The Los Angeles Lakers proposed these ideas to the league and man. I've talked to some of the other executives, and they go, these haven't been even discussed with us. What that tells me is the Lakers are looking for advantages. And why would they be looking for advantages if they think they're the best team? It's because they're a little bit nervous about this, playing in a neutral site, playing under these unusual circumstances. Maybe what we were during the regular season is not going to carry over to this circumstance.
Where do the Lakers find the time between this and these proposals and small business loans? Like, where do they find the time for those things? I digress. Look. We can't replace crowd noise and energy. It's irreplaceable. For you to even attempt to do it is going to come off as gimmicky. It's hilarious that the competition committee had a call on Tuesday discussing all of these issues, and none of these things were proposed, because I think they're understanding that we're going to compromise the integrity of the game by trying to make any of these work. I don't like any of this. You can persuade me to say, okay, I get to stay in the Goofy Hotel and you get to stay in the Mickey Mouse Hotel. Like, that's the only thing that I'm sitting there like, okay, that's an advantage. Everything else sounds so AAU-ish. It's like it's Pop Warner-ish. These are NBA players that you're going to give them their hardwood. That's going to make them feel like more comfortable in home court advantage. None of that stuff matters. We cannot get into a mindset where we're going to compromise the integrity of the game. I don't want to hear about a seventh foul. I don't want to keep giving you possessions. Those four quarters have to be protected in terms of the integrity of the game going forward. If you don't do that, we're already having conversations about the asterisk of this season. You go forward with these proposals, you can guarantee the asterisk is coming. Coming up, there's a racial controversy brewing at Clemson over one of Dabo Sweeney's assistants. We'll break it all down with Eric Mangini and LeVar Arrington. Next, Speak for Yourself is presented by Hyundai. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib. Marcellus Wiley, joined now by LeVar Arrington and NFL longtime coach Eric Mangini. Let's head to college football, where there's a racial controversy brewing at Clemson. Earlier this week, Dabo Sweeney made a statement about social justice in reaction to George Floyd's death. But afterward, a report surfaced that a few years ago, Sweeney had not disciplined a white assistant coach, Danny Pierman, who had used the N-word during practice. Now, the player who was involved in the incident, former tight end DJ Greenlee, has explained what happened, saying, "It was just a heated argument during practice. Basically, me and the coach got into it, and I was speaking with one of my teammates. He heard me use the N-word, basically, and basically tried to correct me by saying the N-word back. He wasn't saying that I was a N-word. It was using the tone in a word like, okay, I was talking to my teammate, and you came over here." A lot to unpack here, LeVar. What's your reaction?
I mean, my first reaction is it's unacceptable. you know, there are some things that sometimes are off limits, and this is one time where it is. As a coach, I understand trying to illustrate and teach, but these are still young men that have been entrusted in these men's hands by their parents. And just thinking about it from my perspective, if I were in that scenario, whether he was trying to teach me, make a point, or what have you, I just don't know how I would have reacted to that in that moment. So now that becomes a very serious moment of truth for the player and for the coach. If that player jumps on that coach and they got to break that up, chances are he gets kicked off of that team. It changes the trajectory of his career. What happens if he doesn't? Then obviously it doesn't get reported. It's looked at as maybe this is a coaching moment. I don't know, but I don't feel as though that's acceptable at any point in time to be a professional, to be a leader, and to be responsible over the young men that you're teaching and coaching and guiding.
Yeah, you know, when I saw this, my reaction was the same as LeVar. It's not acceptable in any context. And when it does happen and you read through the follow-up on it, he eventually apologized to the player and he apologized to the position group. But why wasn't this something where he apologized to the whole team? Why wasn't this a moment for the whole team to talk about this? And if an issue is important, then you have to make it important. And it's definitely important enough to have that conversation in front of the whole team. The other reaction was, what would have happened if a player had done something to a coach, or it said something offensive to a coach, or a player had used an offensive term in general? What type of discipline would there have been? And then shouldn't there have been some discipline applied to this coach? Shouldn't he have been held to a higher standard because he is in that leadership position? And it's even different than the NFL. These are kids. In the NFL, there are more true adults. And in this situation, these are kids.
Inexcusable. One word, inexcusable. In a sport that we know it's all about action and response, I want to break it down to those two layers as well. The action is just inexcusable. But I think the response is really highlighting the real issue here. As we hear Coach apologize, and his apology rings hollow. In his apology, he says, "I repeated a racial slur I overheard when trying to stop the word from being used." Wow. I understand sometimes coaches think two wrongs make it right. Let's mess it up to clean it up. That's how football coaches sometimes act and think. But this is not that opportunity, Coach. And when you say that, all of a sudden, you get into a situation where your apology rings hollow, not only because of the words, but because of the crowd. As you said, Coach Mangini, this is a guy who only apologized to his small tight ends group. But it was said in front of the entire team. And never did he have to apologize in front of the entire team, nor did he. Or was he held accountable in front of the entire team? So when you hear that, LeVar, and knowing that it gets deeper than just the interaction and just that moment, what's your response?
You know, again, just looking at it from a personal standpoint, my mother went to school and was a school teacher, went to get her master's degree at Duquesne while teaching, worked several jobs to be able to provide and do the things that she did so that we would have fair opportunities. If this had came down the pipe and I called home, because you got to believe you're calling home. My mom, not my dad. My dad would have wanted to talk it out. But my mom, it would have been some smoke, some real smoke. So now, again, when something like this happens, if you don't decisively handle that issue, if you don't handle that with an iron fist, then now you're opening up yourself and you're susceptible. Even now, after years of it happening before, Dabo Swinney now has been opened up to some very, very real criticisms based off of his lack of action. I'm going to tell you right now, Okay, there was no drama that came from it. But what if there were? What if that man's mother showed up and was irate with what was done and how it was handled? Does the kid now, because we all have been there, does the kid now slip on the depth chart? Does the kid now not be viewed as important as a player or a part of the society of that team? How does this change that young man's life? And what message mentally, emotionally is that sending to that young man that this was how it was handled? This is us moving on from it. It happened. It was a coaching error, a slip, but it was meant for your own good. It's time out. And I think we're at a point now in our society and culturally speaking, it's time out to turn a deaf ear to ignorance. It's time out to look at things and just say, oh, let's minimize it. It was a teaching moment, so I'm sorry, and let's move on from it. Well, if they made it a bigger deal, I think it's a bigger deal by the player, and it's a bigger implication for the player, and I don't find that to be right or correct at all.
And players understand what's important. And if as a coach you say this is important, but you don't back it up with any action, you don't back it up with any time allocated to discussing it, to addressing it, then it's not really important. Those words ring hollow. And when you have something like this that happens in front of the whole team, but it never gets addressed in front of the whole team, it never gets resolved in front of the whole team, people don't get a chance to express themselves in that environment, then it's not really important. And what would you have done to a player if they had done something that the coaching staff found to be wrong, to be egregious? What would have happened to a player? And then why isn't the coach held to a standard that's even higher? Because you are in a position with kids. These are kids. And I know they're, you know, maybe you look at a football player and you think that they're not kids because of how big they are, but they're still impressionable young men that you have taken a oath and a responsibility to help educate and to help address issues with, and you're not holding up your end of the bargain.
Yeah, I want to be clear here. I stopped using the N-word 10 years ago, and I'm still around people that use the N-word frequently. And I get it. I'm not policing them. I let them know my slice of reality and where I'm coming from. And I allow them the freedom to do what they want to do after that conversation, which is always brief. But my issue is not that. My issue is how these football coaches will come into your living room and look your family in the eye and talk about the promotion of values and what their program stands for. And then when they take you away from that family, where's the enforcement of those same values? Or more so, where's the discipline when those values aren't upheld? And we look at this situation, it's just crazy how when you don't take ownership of your violation, if you're a Coach Pierman, guess what I don't believe? That you're contrite. No ownership, no contrition. Because now it opens up Pandora's box. And guess what occurs then? The cover-up is worse than the crime itself. Now there are other stories coming out. The story of how Coach Dabo Swinney didn't allow the players or suggested to the players not to be a part of a sit-in because that sit-in would distract the team. 5 months before the season starts, he's worrying about a distraction to the team. Or is it a distraction to his audience, his fan base, which is not trying to hear this conversation? So it's just interesting. You can put out all the tweets, all the responses, and talk about social justice on the platform of social media. But where it really needs to be focused on and enforced is on the platform of your practice and playing fields. Hopefully they get this one right and do better going forward. Coming up, could Cam Newton's next job put one of the league's top young quarterbacks in an uncomfortable position? We'll find out next. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai. LeVar Arrington, Coach Mangini, they're both back. Let's head out to Cam Newton and potentially in Arizona. And Cam Newton still looking for work, might have a hot lead on a new opportunity. According to a new CBS Sports column, the Arizona Cardinals might be the best place for Cam to resurrect his career, with Cliff Kingsbury needing an insurance policy in case Kyler Murray goes down, and Cam's dual threat abilities making him a good fit. LaVar, think Cam being around will be good for Kyler Murray?
Would it be good for Kyler Murray? Under great circumstances, yes, but it has to be a no, because I think Cam still has the identity of being a starting quarterback. Coming into a scenario where you're still thinking you're the starter, right? And you got young Kyler who's still trying to find his way heading into his second year. I think that that could be very challenging, so to speak, of how strong the presence and the personality of Cam Newton is. Plus, how are you going to make this work? I mean, you just signed Huntley back to as the backup, and that took pretty much the money that they had. What would you offer Cam? Where's the money coming from? And so I think for those two reasons, I don't think that it would be a good idea, or would it work?
Yeah, I don't see this making much sense either. The big question with Cam is whether or not he's healthy. And if he's healthy, he's better than a lot of starting quarterbacks in the NFL. So assuming that he's healthy and he goes there, he's going to be frustrated being a backup. In addition to that, typically backups that are at a different stage in their career, and they're willing to be teachers and mentors, and Cam has a big personality. He's never I can't imagine Cam Newton's ever been a backup anywhere that he's been for any significant amount of time, and it's a huge adjustment, and you've got a very young quarterback who's starting. That dynamic isn't really what you're looking for from a coaching perspective. And then LaVar makes another good point. How much money are you going to be able to pay him? Is he going to be willing to accept $1.5 million like some of these backups are getting? That's a significant pay cut. And even people with the smallest of egos, that's a tough pill to swallow.
Now, this may sound strange, but I don't think Cam Newton goes into any situation as a backup unless he's allowed to backstab that starter. What does that mean? That means that starter has a chance, a position where he doesn't have a stranglehold on it. So Cam can silently root against that guy having the lack of production that gives the opportunity to Cam. Most situations, you only get a chance if the guy gets injured. Cam, as a backup, needs to be in a situation where the guy could play himself out of that position. And that's not happening in Arizona right now. No, look at Cam Newton. His number is number one, not number two. So Cam is like, miss me as soon as I hear number two on your depth chart. I wear number one for a reason. This is a Cam Newton who has the resume where he's just going to sit there and say, well, y'all relax. Because of your lack of patience, you're trying to fit me into a situation that doesn't make sense and that doesn't optimize my abilities. Cam went to an Ivy League school and is a former CEO of a Fortune 500 company. And people are telling him to go deliver groceries for Instacart right now. Take anything he can just to pay the bills. Cam is going to be patient. Cam's going to wait for the perfect situation. He's not Jameis Winston, who just took a cheap deal and hopefully it works out. Cam is still shooting for the stars like the star he is. Coming up, we got Uncle Jimmy in the house, and we're going to see what Uncle Jimmy thinks about Cam Newton in our latest approval rating. Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the crib. Marcellus Wiley, joined now by Uncle Jimmy. Uncle Jimmy. Bruce Arians. Yes, sir. Sounds pretty confident. Old man Tom Brady can do it all. He's expecting too much from Brady?
Man, look, let me explain something to you. Bruce Arians is a great coach, I'm going to tell you, right? But I don't listen to a word he says, okay? Because Bruce Arians is nothing but the white Samuel L. Jackson of the NFL, all right? He thinks that just because he wears a tango and gazelles, he gets his point across better if he just yells. Remember at the press conference when he fired Jameis Winston? They asked him, did you fire Jameis Winston? He said, yeah. I fired him, and I hope he burns in hell. It's like, Coach, why would you say that? I want these snakes out of my locker room. I want them out now.
Uncle Jimmy. Oh, he goes up too, man.